One small disclaimer before we begin this episode. Due to the processing issues regarding the updates to the slow-moving time machine, we've had some phasing issues with alternate time streams unsuccessfully overlapping when they were supposed to. Namely, that the slow-moving time machine has been unreliable in its release of the recordings that took place within it. For the following episode that you are about to hear, we've received this recording a year after the fact. So there are some obvious timeline discrepancies as it was recorded at the beginning of 2022. Welcome back to Memory Static, the podcast that digs up all the movies you watched when you were little, talks about them, and throws a party to watch them. And of course, stay tuned to the end for a new original song inspired by the movie we're covering. I'm your host, Bailey Moore, and I have with me choosing the movie, the one and only Kay Hoffman. Welcome!
Hi, Bailey. This is so exciting. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited for you to be here, and I'm excited to watch this movie with everybody. But first, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a DJ and event coordinator, costumer, gamer, and I live in Austin, Texas with my husband, who is also all of those things. And we like to do run fairs and go have a blast with our friends in the woods being weirdos, which is how I met you.
That's true.
And me and my friends do making fun of movies that we love that are also terrible called Sasterpiece Theater. And you can check us out on Facebook.
We just look up Sasterpiece Theater on Facebook?
Yep, that's us.
Great. Have you covered this movie?
No, it's actually on my list because I want us to. Mm-hmm. The first movie we did was David Lynch's Dune.
Ah, great. I'm going to have to check that out. Okay, I know we've been a little cagey about what we're doing so far, so can you tell us what we'll be watching?
Okay, so this absolute gem of a horror movie, which is an unintentionally horrifying movie, is Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night. It takes place after Pinocchio has been turned into a real boy by the Blue Fairy, and he just lives with Geppetto, you know, just chilling, doing his thing. And he is tasked with taking something that Geppetto has crafted to a rich person somewhere out of town. And instead of doing that on the way, he sells it to a carnival to go watch another puppet do a little song and dance act that is absolutely terrifying. It is one of the scariest things I've ever seen. And I saw this movie the year after it came out, but like on TV at my grandmother's house in the basement.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, worst possible conditions for seeing a super scary, weird movie.
What was your grandmother's basement like?
It was literally an entire house submerged underground. Like, it was fully functional. It was basically two houses stacked on top of each other. And so I was in the downstairs part, and they built window wells, two per room minimum. So they never had lights on. It was just always light from outside, but it was like that downward angle. So like everything was always a little too dark and just a little spooky. Mm-hmm. And always kind of hazy.
Sounds like the best or worst place to watch a scary movie as a child.
Yeah, but there were definitely some pretty intense moments when Gremlins came out. We were able to watch that too.
I bet. So how old were you when you watched it?
Oh, gosh. We saw it right after it came out. And I want to say this came out in like 1987.
Yes.
So I saw it when I was about 9. Okay. And I already had a pretty intense reputation for watching animated stuff that was not age appropriate, like Watership Down.
Uh-huh.
I had already seen that by the time I saw that. And my mother would just record anything that came on TV that was animated, no matter what it was. She didn't know the content, nothing. So I got some really amazing stuff in the 80s. Lots of stuff on Betamax that I'm just like, what in the world? Like, there's one where like it's a Snow White story, but it's like the Jetsons in medieval space.
What?
And Snow White gets shot and she actually dies.
What?
And they show it.
I need to see this.
Yeah, I looked it up a couple weeks ago and it is real. It was not a fever dream.
I will say, like, while researching this movie, I found so many different versions of Pinocchio from different countries. And some of them look really intense and dark.
Yeah. So at one point, as Pinocchio is trying to maneuver through a hellscape not unlike Vegas, he gets drunk from a fountain that a bunch of other kids are getting drunk and playing in. And he starts to like hallucinate and basically starts having a bad trip.
Yeah, it's a crazy scene. What was something that really stood out to you when you were little about this movie?
Man, I was so struck by the Blue Fairy's voice. She was like breathy in this way that like Mia Farrow thought about doing and then, you know, actually did a great job doing what she did instead. But like the actress who played the Blue Fairy was like a famous singer, Ricky Lee Jones. My dad went, "Hey, I recognize that voice." And, you know, because he was an audiophile. So I paid more attention to it. And I was like so fascinated that this real life person was speaking through this cartoon. And it was someone that like, I could look at a picture of and be like, ah. I don't know, that just really struck me as a kid.
Was that the first time that that concept had been introduced to you, that there's actually actors doing the voices of the cartoons?
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever really put a lot of thought into it, which is ironic because growing up, I wanted to be an animator. It was like the voices belonged to the cartoons in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like they were living characters outside of this movie.
Yeah, like in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I used to think of cartoon characters as my friends, that I just could not visit them where they lived.
Right.
Speaking of which, did you have any toys that you wished were alive when you were a kid?
Oh my gosh. Like all of my My Little Ponies for sure, because I had all the movies and I already knew all of their personalities and clearly they would be amazing friends. So.
Yeah, they would. What would you have done with them?
I had ponies and horses growing up. So it would have been basically getting to go on adventures with my ponies and horses, but they would talk to me too.
That's like every child's dream.
Pretty much. Yeah. And I grew up on a really big farm and I started riding very young. And we would just go out across our fields and they were like heavily wooded and there was a pond and a lake. And we'd go back and forth between them and pretend they were like other planets.
Oh, that's fun. So what did you think about the concept of lying as a child, since that's something that Pinocchio can't help but do in anything he's in? And can you remember getting caught in a lie?
Oh, totally. I had a nickname, Let's Make a Deal, where I would get caught doing something I wasn't supposed to do. I would inevitably try to lie at first. And as I got older, I realized I was just not very good at it. So instead, I would just tell my parents, you know, okay, let's make a deal. Since I did this and you're upset with me, I can get 5 spankings, or I'll clean up this instead and we can just do that right now and get it over with and nobody's mad. Oh. And they said I started doing this around like 6 or something. And I just carried on until it was 10 and my parents were just like, yeah, you know what? Just never mind.
That's amazing. Let me just negotiate with you about what my punishment is going to be and we'll get past this.
Yeah, we'll just get like right out in front of this issue, address it now and move forward. Okay, here we go.
It's so efficient.
I had things to do, like play My Little Pony. It's busy.
Did you make any wishes on a star when you were a kid?
Oh gosh, all the time. Like I said, we lived on a farm, so we had little to no light pollution where I grew up. And we could see shooting stars all the time. And my favorite thing to wish for was that anytime I put my hand in my pocket, exactly as much money as would be helpful to have would be there in the right denomination and the right time frame.
That is an amazing wish.
I saw the monkey's paw very young. for anybody who has not seen that movie, if you make a wish, they twist the wording. So yeah, you get it, but you don't want what you got. That whole concept always really freaked me out. So I spent a lot of time very carefully figuring out exactly what my precisely worded wish would be.
You had to find where any of those loopholes were, just like a lawyer.
Yep.
Those sneaky stars.
They are. My gosh.
So, as you said before, the trouble starts for Pinocchio when he's meant to deliver a music box to the mayor, but instead gets tempted by a traveling carnival. Do you have memories when you were given a little bit more responsibility as a kid and didn't quite meet those expectations?
Oh, so on the farm, I was tall. I was really tall for a kid. And we had three farms, two of which were separated by a road called Route 17, which is an interstate highway in Virginia. We did not have a lot of farmhands when I was growing up because, you know, there's my cousins and myself. And by the time I was 8 years old, I was driving. I would drive in the pickup truck behind them in the tractor, or I would drive the tractor back and forth between the farms.
8 years old?
At about eight, yeah.
Wow.
Old tractors are incredibly simple. It is just, you turn it on, and then there's a big wheel with what is like a doorknob on it. And that's what you actually use to turn the wheel to steer, is the doorknob.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's it. That's all you do. So they would just like put me up there and turn it on and just go. And it was just going, you know, back and forth. So nobody thought much of it. And this is rural Virginia. So we did this a lot. But by like the time I was 10, I was much taller. In everyday life right now, I'm 5'11". And when I was about 10, I was already about like 4'8". Mm. And I just kept getting bigger quicker. So my dad got in the habit of letting me leave the farm before he was actually ready to follow. And he'd be like, no, you just go ahead and I'll catch up. It's fine. And the only thing was that I had to go home. And I had to go home through the field. I couldn't go home through like the itty bitty part of our village that was close to our house. And on this one occasion, he was like, no, you can go ahead and go, but you need to go home. And I was like, well, but I thought I could maybe go get like a candy bar because I really like zero candy bars and I just wanted one. And mm-hmm. my dad was like, no, you need to just go ahead and go home. And I did not. I totally went to the convenience store and it got a candy bar. Unfortunately for me, the clerk at the convenience store went to high school with my parents and was pretty sure I was not supposed to be there by myself. And so called the house. So my dad found out when he got to the house and I was not allowed to go by myself before my dad or anybody else was ready ever again. But my dad didn't punish me because he said, at least I knew what I wanted and I did what I had to get it without fucking up. My dad was one of those dads that was like, they called home and said, oh, your daughter was in a fight. It's like, did she start it or did she finish it? So he was a real wild dude and definitely had interesting turns of phrase and stuff like that.
So in this instance, there was no let's make a deal?
No. I was like, well, I still want to keep driving. And he was like, well, I need you to keep driving. So I'm not going to take that away from you. You're just not going to get to do anything fun for a while. I'm like, fine. But, you know, I said fine to my dad, not, yes sir, or something.
That's amazing. That's a really good story. So I think that I hear the time machine beckoning. Can you hear it?
Yeah, it's kind of shrill, isn't it, Jean?
A little, yeah. I mean, it makes some weird noises because I have to send a door to where you are.
Oh, is this what this is? Okay.
Yeah.
I should not let my cat go in there, should I?
We've had dogs in the time machine, but we have not had any cats, and I'm not sure how they'll react to it. They're very sensitive.
And my cat Scarborough is kind of a little ball of evil, so probably don't need that traveling through time.
No, probably not. Okay, so this is a reminder For anyone listening, this is where to pause if you'd like to watch the movie with no more spoilers. And you can find Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night for free on YouTube. Okay, are you ready to walk through your door and I'll walk through mine?
All right, I'm good.
All right, I will see you inside.
Do not be alarmed if your human appendages appear to lengthen or shorten unexpectedly. This is to be expected.
See you inside.
All right. Here we are. You'll notice the COVID-safe plexiglass that divides the time machine in half. So
that is so thoughtful. I mean, just bravo.
Thank you. We had to make some adjustments, just like everybody.
I'm glad you did.
Do you know where we are right now and what it does?
You were telling me a bit about it. We're in the slow-moving time machine. And what's happening is, well, it's kind of like there's two of us right now, like just sort of vibing, but we're all doing our own thing.
Yeah. We're out at the party watching the movie with everyone else inside the time machine talking about the movie.
Technology is amazing. No gods, no masters.
Are you ready to hear about this movie? I know that you already know some stuff about this movie, but you can cut me off at any time that you want to add something or if I've said anything wrong and you want to correct me. So are you ready?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay. Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night. Let's talk about cast first, because there are some notable names on this list.
God, this thing is star-studded for being the bizarro world of what it is. Well, James Earl Jones, right off the bat.
Yes, he's the Emperor of the Night.
Yeah, he's the freaking Emperor of the Night. And again, scariest freaking movie, because the Emperor looks like the devil, the actual devil. And it's James Earl Jones as the devil, as the Emperor of the Night. And you're supposed to be like associating with Pinocchio, who's like, I don't know, the size of this dude's thumb. It's so mad. And like Scott Grimes, Don Knotts, Tom Bosley, Ed Asner, like in everything. Just as I watched this movie as a kid, because I would know a lot of the voices, like especially, you know, James Earl Jones and Don Knotts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recognized Don Knotts' voice while watching it, even though it's pitched up. And I was like, I know that voice. I think that's Don Knotts. And then I was right. It's great.
And like I said, this is like when I first started grasping the concept that these were actors making these cartoons come to life, not just these are living things that are being recorded. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I know all these people. I know all these voices. And oh my gosh, it blows my mind that they convinced all of these people to do this and did so little with it.
Right. Well, and a couple that you didn't mention, Frank Welker is Igor, who's the voice of Fred Jones, always has been in Scooby-Doo. And Jonathan Harris is Grumblebee, who was the original Dr. Smith on the original Lost in Space.
Yeah, it's just absolutely mad.
Yeah, it's just a lot of familiar voices and familiar names in this movie.
If a movie like this came out now, it would be like, oh, this is a hey, do me a favor kind of movie. And then there's like some unifying person in here that's just friends with all these people and was like, look, could you just like them do this? I've got this Filmation thing. All right. I just, oh God, please.
Yeah.
I'll buy you beer.
So you looked up the date earlier, but it was released in theaters on December 25th, 1987.
I actually use that fact as an excuse to watch this movie during Christmas time because it came out on Christmas. So it's a Christmas movie because so is Hocus Pocus. So, ta-da.
Yeah, it is funny that it was released on Christmas Day. Do you have any guesses as to how it was received by critics?
From what I recall, it was like kind of a mixed bag. Like a couple of people were like, yeah, this is good. Or like they said that James Earl Jones and Ricky Lee were really good, but like the rest of it was kind of trash.
Yeah. And one particularly snarky review, Janet Maslin of the New York Times described it as Saturday morning animation at its best.
Oh man, I've got a worse one than that. There was one that was, I think it was Leonard Maltin. He says some striking animation is wasted on this uninspired sequel to Disney's 1940 gem. Even at its best, this is an embarrassment compared to Unkerwalt's predecessor. It is vicious. If you don't like it, the people that don't like it are like angry about how much they don't like it.
I feel like they feel personally affronted that they had to sit through it, I guess.
Yeah, and I use this as a trade movie because I love movies. I especially love bad movies. And I enjoy trading bad movie for bad movie. And I have frequently traded this one for other people. Like, I'll sit through their movie, they sit through mine.
That sounds really fun to me, in my opinion.
It's great. Another really good one that I actually got sent by my friend and comedian in Houston, you should go see, Michael Paris, is a movie called Nudist Colony of the Dead. And it's a musical.
What?
Yeah. It is. It's amazing. Depending on my audience, this movie, Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night, and Nudist Colony of the Dead are my go-to trashy trade movies. Go-to.
That's really great. I really want to see that. That sounds ridiculous and amazing.
We can definitely make it happen.
So I did pick the review specifically, the Saturday Morning Animation at its best, because it seems to be a pointed insult directed at the production company Filmation.
Yeah, because they did He-Man and She-Ra. And me personally, like I said, I wanted to be an animator when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. I actually knew production companies. So I followed like Filmation and I loved John Bluth Studios once, you know, they came into being when they got out with Disney. I loved Filmation stuff. And like part of why I got excited when like I put in the tape for this movie that my mom put up was when the Filmation, all the colors popped up and they just fall into place like a keyboard. That is such a big nostalgia feel.
Yeah. So I was really excited to dig into this one because it's the first Filmation movie that we've covered on Memory Static, and I love learning new animation history. So I am looking forward to talking about that. But first, I wanted to travel back in time to 1881 when a man named Carlo Collodi sent a short sketch about a sentient wooden puppet to a friend who edited the Giornale per I Bambini, one of the first weekly children's magazines in Italy. And Pinocchio was published in serialized installments and had some very dark elements included. Have you ever read Pinocchio before?
I have. Yeah.
Cool. I bought it to read for this, but I didn't get it in time.
Oh, okay.
Can you give us some of the darker highlights? Because I have it written here, but I think it would be better if you told us.
Like one of the big standouts is that Pinocchio smokes more than once. He gets super duper fall down drunk. Like everybody is really all about getting this little kid drunk. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. And like he like dies. He like dies. Like he doesn't just, you know, oh, isn't this clap your hands. Like he was dead.
In the original run of Pinocchio, he dies at the end, but people were really upset about that, so the editor got the author to write more chapters, and that's how you get Pinocchio turning into a little boy.
Yeah. I remember, like, I even got to see some of the drawings, the old drawings that they used for it, and they were so grim. Mm. They were just like, black and white and just so very stark and just, yeah. It was rough.
Do you remember what happens to the talking cricket?
I don't, actually.
Okay, so I was curious because in Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night, Pinocchio has a glow bug as a companion. And so that made me curious, did Disney invent Jiminy Cricket? Like, did Disney invent the cricket as part of the story? And they didn't. There was a talking cricket in the original Pinocchio story, but Pinocchio kills him.
Oh,
and
God.
And then the cricket comes back as a ghost that continues giving Pinocchio unwanted advice.
Oh my God, talk about,
Yeah.
Don't go back to your abuser, baby, don't do it, no. Oh my gosh.
I know, poor cricket. And also the cricket was like 100 years old or something when Pinocchio killed it.
What a douche.
I know. So children's literature at this time was a budding new industry, so this book was highly influential for many writers that came after. So it is like the second or third most translated book in the world. Second or third, depending on the sources, to the Bible and one other. And then there's Pinocchio.
So another thing about it, like a little bit of trivia or whatever, is like, you know how some of the review that I mentioned called it a poor excuse for a sequel? Disney tried to sue Filmation.
Yes.
Because of this was so similar, but they lost because Filmation was like, look, this is public domain. You can do whatever you want. That's why you did it. Yeah. And they lost. And it was just like, God, the brass ones on Disney to think that they could be like, look, you stole this thing that we stole first.
It's amazing that they won for one.
Yeah. You don't fight Disney.
Yeah. You don't imagine that anyone's going to win against Disney. So they had actually planned to make 13 films that were continuations of the classic fairy tales. And I didn't write the whole list down, but they only got one of those movies out, one other than Pinocchio, which was the one about Snow White. And then sadly, the company was bought out by someone else, but the film studio just closed. Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Filmation and their history. So we're going to fast forward to the 1960s, because that's when Filmation became a production company. And they began with producing commercials for Gillette. And then they started on their first major animated production in 1962 for The Journey Back to Oz. But this project was delayed for almost a decade. So in the interim, they focused on a medium that would yield more immediate success. And you kind of already mentioned some of those already. So that was for network television. Filmation was kind of infamous for somewhat abusing limited animation techniques. For longtime listeners of Memory Static, you'll remember a brief discussion on this type of animation in the Gay Paris episode. Are you familiar with limited animation? Of course you are, because you wanted to be an animator. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've written down some of the ones that Filmation used. Okay, so these techniques were generally favored as cost-cutting devices in animation made for television. One of the specific limited animation techniques that Filmation uses limited the frames per second. So normally there are about 42 frames per second in TV animation, but Filmation used less than that.
Like, and I think it was like around 20.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's real bad, and yeah, it makes it look like super jerky.
Right, exactly. Because to try to make up for the deficit of leaving out those frames, they would repeat frames. So you'd have like movement a little static. And so it would be, like you said, jerky.
Yeah, that method of what you put in between everything. There's key animation, which is like the main highly detailed cell. Then you have in-betweens that go in between like one key and the next. And all the ones that are in the middle of that are usually like some of the most warped looking images of things. Like if someone's like swinging their hand, it's just like a club, just like a flesh colored club just flying. And then the next one is like super detailed again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like these, they were like, okay, here's hyper detailed, because they did Star Trek too. They did animated mm-hmm. Star Trek.
They did.
They'd be like, here's all like super detailed Spock on this planet with all these rocks and stuff, and then he does like this arm movement like on Scooby-Doo. Like it's just that same two pumps of the arm, and then it was just over and over and over again.
Yeah, like you were saying, they frequently reuse stock footage. So I can think of at least one example in this movie, and it's in The Fairy with the Turquoise Hair's musical number, where it shows a close-up of Pinocchio smiling, and it shows it like several times within this music number, and it's the exact same footage
yep,
each time. Is. Oh, and when they did that in like He-Man and stuff like that, when they reused some of the stock footage, they would only stay on it.
Yeah, it's like under a certain number of seconds.
Yeah, so you wouldn't have enough time. You know what it was that you were looking at, but you didn't have enough time to notice continuity errors.
Yeah, that's actually something that they do still now, especially with CGI. Mm. And the longer and the slower the pace of a character as they pass through a scene that has CGI in it, the less budget they had, the shorter amount of time they're there. It's like the more languid the character is moving through, the more time that's spent on it, that's more budget. So oh, if wow. they're like, yeah, if like in editing, they'll like jump rapidly, like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's to avoid doing highly detailed animations and stuff like that.
Wow.
You see it in action movies a lot where they're trying to like do a lot with a little amount of props. They'll back and forth, cut it really quick, and they'll move things around from the scene from one spot to the next so that they use the same stuff.
Wow, I'm going to have to pay more attention. Something else that Filmation was known for within their style was that lingering on backdrops and doing slow pans that didn't require any other animation, and it chewed up a lot of time.
Yeah, another animation studio famous for that is Gainax, and Neon Genesis Evangelion was like the epitome of, we have no budget, here's exposition over scenery.
Amazing. You got to figure out how to do it when you don't have the money.
Yeah, you have nothing. That's what you do. Just stall. Just stall.
So a couple things other than He-Man, She-Ra, Star Trek, they also did the Archie show. And
yeah, oh, that's right.
And Fat Albert.
Yeah, I knew they did Fat Albert and Flash Gordon too, I think.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. I didn't write that one down. So I don't have a whole lot else other than that the film cost $10 million to make and only grossed a little bit over $3
million. Yeah, it did so freaking bad. Mm-hmm. So bad.
Mm-hmm. But just like a lot of these movies that didn't do well and were critically panned at the time, it has since gained a cult following.
Yeah, it's me. I'm leading the cult.
Well, do you have anything else to add about this movie before we join the rest of the party?
If you are going to enjoy some sort of recreational, now's the time.
All right. Well, are you ready to join the party?
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll rejoin ourselves. And if you have a moment of feeling a little discombobulated, it will pass over just a couple minutes.
Right. It's all part of the time machine thing.
Right. All right. See you out there.
Ah-choo! Warning! The time machine is incompatible with feline particles. The presence of feline particles aboard the time machine may result in feline elongation or constriction.
See you there!
Alright, here we are at the Zoom party for Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night. We've stepped off of the slow-moving time machine. Kay, how are you feeling?
A little woozy, but
I think
I'll be okay. But I can't help but do this. Kind of gives me a sense of like I'm not wobbling through space and time anymore. Trying to get back in like my vibe.
Does it feel a little like Pinocchio in the underworld of where dreams come true?
I think it was the Empire of the Night when they're like inside the ship. But yeah, I did not build my office out of particle board though, so I should be okay.
Well, let's open it up to everyone else. So, okay, we'll just hop right in. If you had a talking bug as a companion, what would it be and why?
It definitely would want some kind of a moth, just because they are also largely nocturnal and fluffy and soft, and you can pet them, and they can get, like, big, and they're fun to, like, walk around on, like, your face.
You know, I feel similarly about a caterpillar. I really like the way they move and wiggle, and I feel like I would freak out if there's one on my face, but also if I could manage to stay still, it would be, like, one of the best experiences.
It feels very weird. We're from Virginia, and there's a lot of wool caterpillars there that are not poisonous, and there would just be so many, and we would just kind of collect them and just let them walk all over, and it just feels like this very cute little tickle.
Oh my gosh, like little eyelash kisses?
Yeah, like little eyelash kisses, yeah. I have legitimately been licked by a butterfly before, and that is exactly what it feels like too.
Oh my God.
If you have a bug friend that is part of a hive mind, do you get the whole hive?
Ooh.
Like, what if I chose the queen bee?
Dang. Oh,
that's a pretty good companion to have. What do you think about?
What we talk about? Probably gossip. It's like the bees can go everywhere.
I know everything that's going on in this place.
Yeah.
But we had a bee as a character, you know.
With a weird people face.
Yeah, a weird people face bee. But he was a bee. So in theory, it just unrelated to his hive mind anymore.
I thought that he was a bumblebee. And aren't those he's like,
more solitary?
I think so.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Is that a comment on the dump truck that he was hauling around the whole film?
Yeah.
I would also, he was part of the royal division of bugs or whatever.
No, it was a play on the RAF.
Yeah, oh, I didn't catch that at all. UK. I've never heard about that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's why he's British too.
That was a good pun.
So he does have a queen.
Well, okay.
I mean, for the past 100 years, yeah. Her Majesty's Royal Air Force. Makes sense.
I'm going to go in a weird direction here, and bear with me for just a second. What? Assuming that this is a sentient creature who can also talk and like hold realistic, long-winded conversations and critical thinking, all of these assumptions being true, I would only in this situation go with a spider because I think that'd be so fucking cool. But like anything less than all of those requirements and oh my God, no.
Okay. So the spider was like an idiot.
Like I said earlier in the movie, like spiders are clearly too stupid to be anthropomorphized and get a face. That's why like when they try to take the bee, they're just like basically kind of like warthogs and they sort of squeal.
The big spider had a face and a tongue.
Sort of. But it was like very monstrous and like not like, and there clearly wasn't a lot of like sentient planning going on.
Do you remember the children's book with the spider that just wants to have tea with people and no one will have tea with her because she's a scary spider and she's like kind and nice. And like, I also, Jeremy's answer was basically what my answer would have been. So
that was a great book, Tixana.
What would you choose, Bailey?
Well, I wanted to clarify something with Jeremy because the question that I wanted to ask was whether it was a web-weaving spider or a jumping spider. Oh. And the only spiders we saw represented, the ones that were really dumb, were web-weaving spiders. So would you want a jumping spider, Jeremy?
Yeah, honestly, it would be a jumping spider. I'd like this little, because, oh my God, they're so fucking cute. I love jumping spiders. I just don't want them anywhere near me. That's all.
I have heard that you can make friends with jumping spiders.
Yeah, I looked into it a few months ago, actually. Turns out you can buy them in mass as pets and just like leave them around your house and they'll like eventually learn to tolerate and recognize you.
Oh, why would you do that?
Now I know what I want for my birthday.
No, you're not going to. No. You know what? Then you can go get another house.
Would they teach their children to tolerate you? Would you form a culture?
Yeah, long term, like what would happen? Who do they like? Is there like how would they organize? Other like, you know, if they all went for like the same corner of the house, there wouldn't be enough food for everybody.
That makes me think of is it Aragog in Harry Potter where the big spider is friends with Hagrid, but the children don't care about Hagrid? You have a big friendly spider that has tons and tons of babies. And then once the big spider dies, then, you know,
it's like, oh, well, bye. Yeah.
And you're gonna have spiders in your food. That's unavoidable if you've got that many spiders in your house.
Oh, yeah. Like, what's the metric about how many spiders a person eats in their lifetime while they're sleeping?
Fact check.
That's not true.
That's a myth.
Busted. I'm suggesting that Jeremy's approach to life may actually make that myth a reality.
I would choose a praying mantis.
Good choice.
Nice. I feel like, you know, it'd be kind of cute if it, you know, lifted its little the pincers up to my ear and turn its head and whisper behind its pincer into my ear. I just think that would be really cute.
That would be really cute.
What character in this movie would you most want to hang out with and why?
Probably Ed Asner, the raccoon, because that dude has seen some shit. He has some stories. He is clearly fun and probably non-judgmental because he's just been doing whatever to get by. Probably be a nice dude.
Yeah, I'd chill with him.
Just watch your wallet. Like,
he's definitely reinforcing the raccoons and crime stereotype that the internet has taught us in the succeeding 40 years since this movie was released. So maybe this is more ahead of its time in multiple ways.
This is where that stereotype came from.
This is it. This was the moment where America turned against the raccoon.
I'm sorry, Shiloh.
I also thought it was interesting how he was kind of like the jester character outside of the normal moral hierarchy that everyone else has to follow. Like, he's not going to turn into a puppet even if he does bad things.
Yeah, he's definitely like in the middle, ambiguous. He's morally ambiguous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can I choose Pinocchio but in puppet form?
Sure. But why?
Well, we could I just kind of want Pinocchio to tell stories and find out what the actual rules are about the nose.
I like watching the humanity drain from his eyes.
You just want to experiment with Pinocchio.
I like learning fun. About the lore.
And I was going to say, could it be Pinocchio? Because he clearly has a lot of like trauma to unpack. And he needs some help.
And you want to hang out with that?
I mean, of all the characters on the in the movie, I don't think I'd want to hang out, like be friends with really any of them.
Not even Satan, Texana?
No, definitely not. That one would definitely, that's horrible.
I like you said no, like Willikers did when he's like, you want to get on the boat? No!
No!
Do you think that Pinocchio in puppet form can feel pain?
I feel like he must not be able to. Because whenever he's like flailing or doing anything as a puppet, like nothing happens to him at all.
In which case, do you think that the regenerative power of his nose extends to the rest of him?
And that's a really good question.
Could Pinocchio be an infinite source of like fire?
You sound like the bad guy from the peanut butter solution.
What's the peanut butter solution?
Kay, you have to watch The Peanut Butter Solution. It is the weirdest movie I think I've ever seen. I will try to summarize.
1985.
It's about this child who goes into a haunted house.
Jesus.
Has his hair scared off of him, and he's really sad because he doesn't have any hair.
Seen this?
And so then the ghosts appear to him and give him a formula that's going to make his hair grow back. It has peanut butter in it, the peanut butter solution, and he puts it on, but once his hair starts growing, it doesn't stop growing, and then he's really, really sad because he can't do anything because his hair is growing too long. And then he has this evil teacher that gets fired from his school, who has a factory of children of stolen children putting paintbrushes together. He sees the kid with the ever-growing hair, and he's like, this is the perfect solution to my hair, my paintbrush problem. I'm going to make paintbrushes out of this child's hair. So he kidnaps him. At some point, there's another kid that decides to experiment with the peanut butter solution by putting on in pubic area. It's
a
really, really strange movie.
I remembered it. I like went and Googled it, and there's the scene with the kid with the paintbrush on his head. And I was like, oh, that's it. I remember that because I freaked out about like the noise that it made when he was painting his head. Like the sound was disgusting.
Okay. My question is, why didn't they make Pinocchio sign the contract before they gave him all of the fun times? I'm not sure why they waited until after, because Pinocchio totally would have signed that contract. And that movie would have ended.
I think that he had to give away his freedom knowing what he was giving away.
There seems to be like an aspect of like owing somebody something and guilt. And it seemed very important that Pinocchio had to like take full advantage of somebody else and then have to pay for it. He was taking advantage of, you know, Satan's hospitality and all the fun stuff and all the gifts and the whatever. I feel like that's what they mean, is that he got something out of that and now he had to pay for what he got out.
Yeah, my issue with like all of this setup is that there is literally no one that has told him that any of this stuff is wrong or bad. Like, all he knows is like, this is fun and it feels good. So like,
And they clearly know that there is a big risk to him out there because they keep going, I hope you don't find out. You don't need to know. And it's like, yeah, he probably does. If you tell him this really bad shit is lurking out there after him, maybe he'll be a little more careful. At least at the end, Pinocchio was like, all right, I super fucked up, and now I have to take ownership of my fuck up and do something about it. It shouldn't have been suicide, but...
Also, does it feel like this to anyone else? I feel very conflicted about the fairy with the turquoise hair, because it kind of feels like she brought Pinocchio to life just so that she could position him in this way.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. She is a fucking mercenary.
The whole thing is a morality play for Christianity, right? Like, this gets to the whole create man with will and then see what happens. What's the consequences? I don't know. They're probably there, but I'm not going to tell you.
I don't feel like it's as heavy-handed of a specifically Christian allegory, because they focus so much on free will. And as we know, like, super organized Christian religion is not so much about free will.
I would actually posit the argument that Pinocchio being brought to life and then given free choice and then making a mistake that his creator explicitly told him not to do is pretty parallel with the story of Adam in the Bible.
Yeah, it totally is.
Told him not to do the thing.
And he was tempted by Twinkle, and they blame Eve. Now, look at this.
I will say, when I was reading about Pinocchio, the story, the original story, it was written shortly after the unification of Italy, and that there were a lot of young men that were leaving the towns they grew up in and exploring, and so it was kind of written
rowdy.
As this, huh?
It was like really rowdy during that period.
And so it was kind of written as this cautionary tale saying that you need to not search for fun, like not fritter your time away. You need to work hard and contribute to your community where you are. So I feel like it's interesting that's where it came from. And you can still see it in this movie of Pinocchio made in the 80s.
Yeah. I think, like, this Pinocchio, like, specifically, though, because, like I said, I've seen a bunch of other ones, like that weird 1972 one, and then that, the other one you were talking about. This is the only one where he is hyper-focused on his dad. And, like, you know, just, oh, my God, that he can't disappoint him, that he has to apologize to him, that he has to do the right thing for him. And that's, like, the first thing out of his fucking mouth all the time. Are you okay? What about you? You need to do what's right for it. Like, I mean, think about it. When he was getting turned into a puppet, he was like, all right, I guess this is it. And he only got pissed when the devil was like, psych, and I'm going to toss everybody away anyway. And then he's like, oh, wait, no, this isn't fine now. He was okay with, I guess, taking his own medicine or whatever until it was damaging to other people that were not involved in his choices. And I thought that was pretty fly for a little kid, for a one-year-old.
Yeah, one-year-old.
I moved more heavily towards the religious imagery halfway through the film, but earlier in and on it, what stood out to me most was it very much felt like some corporate grouping put together a film that explained why it was so important to not go looking for fun.
Yeah, it's interesting to make fun seem like a punishable sin.
So, not to defend the potentially insidious messages in the movie, but Pinocchio was specifically breaking his promise by going to see the carnival instead of doing his errands first.
Yes.
So, like, the wholesome take would be do what you promised to do and then you can have fun.
Yeah, if he had just done that from the beginning, none of the rest of it would have happened.
Yeah, because I think they even like implied that Geppetto would take him later if you had just done what you were supposed to do and waited a little bit. You would have gotten to do this thing safely, and instead you like fucking took off on your own, and then it was a shit show
and had a bad Molly trip.
That did not seem like Molly to me. That was like. Like bad acid and like mental health issues. Molly, you're just like so hyper. he was like, I don't know, I'm in my own brain.
It was definitely a cocktail. It was fizzy.
He hadn't chugged an entire mug in like 5 seconds.
Two.
He
had two back to back. Things. Yeah.
What, you can never tell when it's fizzy. There could be anything in there.
What was I? Oh, yeah. I was going to say, the fact that they started the entire movie by showing that the carnival was itself hell, I'm willing to bet that had Geppetto taken Pinocchio, Pinocchio would have been kidnapped in a much more brutal fashion.
Yes, and probably Geppetto would have gotten, like, real messed up, like, in a more permanent way.
But it would have been more moral.
Also, like, I don't know if they could have just kidnapped Pinocchio and taken him from Geppetto, because part of it was being tempted by all of these things and him making these decisions that led to, like, him ultimately relinquishing his freedom.
So then he'd have to tempt Geppetto as well.
Oh, yeah. I feel like because they, like, represent Geppetto, like, so milquetoast, his only temptation would probably be saving Pinocchio from something.
Yeah, I was just wondering, what would they tempt Geppetto with?
Here's a nice toupee.
Some really nice mahogany.
Yeah, some really fine-grained sandpaper.
This plane has an amazing edge, better than anything you've got.
Or like,
No. They're going to go, let's introduce you to the circular saw. Ooh, it's like magic.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
This is power tool.
A lathe. What if he had a lathe? My God.
What he wouldn't do with a lathe. So if you had an enchantment on you that turned you into something else other than flesh, what would be the worst thing to turn into in your mind?
I'm going to go with goo.
Any kind of specific goo?
Well, I mean, like, goo that doesn't have bones in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
The weird Cronenberg.
Yeah, Haley gets me.
I think there's a Wolverine frog. I would not want to turn into a Wolverine frog. They are gross. They have hair. They have gross hair. And when threatened, they will break their own limbs and fight with their exposed bones.
Ew.
They have fingernails too.
That is badass.
That's fucking brutal.
Like the idea of the textures is disgusting. And like, I've never broken a bone before, so the idea of doing that on the regular is terrifying.
But if that happened to you, I feel like you'd get used to it and you could quickly become adept at the art of fighting that way.
Was the frog in the movie a Wolverine frog?
It didn't look like it, but it did have fingernails and a thumb.
You know, I was thinking something similar. Originally, Kate, I was thinking something similar. That, you know, maybe turning into Jell-O would be pretty horrible.
Well, if it's Jell-O that's, like, in the same shape as you, that would be fun.
Yeah, but
not, like, melted Jell-O would be bad.
But you'd crumble really easily. And then you just be a pile.
Imagine stepping on a storm drain, and then you're part of you goes through it, and part of you stays on the ground, and then your brain is split like a chameleon's eyeballs.
Oh, no!
Yeah, and now we're getting into the, like, meta lore of, if you do that, does your consciousness, like, spread, and can you get all of those experiences at the same time?
I mean, we just did that in the time machine. So
that's true. There's precedent.
Yeah, but not as, like, gross piles of Jell-O.
Also, you have to question your ability to, like, reconstitute yourself,
like Alex, like, Mack.
Or like those pieces that went off, like. Do they immediately lose, like, their membrane? Like, is it like your consciousness that's holding them together? So if they're separated, do they just go?
Like, is the Jell-O protected from crumbling by walking? In which case, then why isn't the goo able to be
right?
Like, there's this goo monster. Remember that, like, the goo walking around in Scooby-Doo?
This is the question I was going to ask for Bailey. To clarify your question, which is, so Pinocchio gets turned into wood or mm-hmm. turned back into wood, but he has control over his body. He can still move it around.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did get turned into Jell-O, would you be able to move the Jell-O around and be like a gooey shapeshifter? And if that's true, could you turn into smoke and just spread yourself wherever and be omnipresent and omniscient? And then you could just collect yourself whenever, because that would be very powerful.
I have never in my life
atmosphere.
I have never in my life witnessed Jell-O turn into smoke.
No, these are two separate situations.
I mean, I was thinking like maybe if there's some kind of flexible Jell-O mold.
Right. So Cullen points out that it's supposed to be the worst thing you can turn into. So I guess the actual worst thing would be something that you can't really do much with. So that would be more like a Wolverine frog would probably be a better answer.
Or a couch.
Because then people will fart on you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like people will sit on you all day. They fart on you. They talk about things you don't care about, and you just have to sit there and listen.
You get to have sex on you. They'd wipe their dusty Cheeto fingers all over your face and body.
Well, in that case, a toilet would be worse, right?
At least toilets, they flush it away.
And the pipe is obviously your throat.
Oh. Thanks for that.
I feel like that's a good time to move on.
What if the pipe is also your butt and it's just going away?
Like a worm. It's a mouth, butt.
Like cat dog.
Cat dog.
Mm-hmm.
Where do they eat? Where do they poop? Where do they pee? We'll never know.
Oh, yeah. My other answer to that was to be an Oscar Mayer wiener just because of the song, you know? Then there would be nothing left of me. Anyway.
Okay, but wait, if you were a hot dog, then would you retain your consciousness as you were consumed? Oh. And this brings us to the same question of would that consciousness like eventually spread throughout the earth and you would become like a nature spirit?
I guess like you'd get to that, like live out the magic school bus, you know, really get to know the human digestive system.
Since we're on memory static right now, and we like to talk about things we saw when we were younger, I would like to point out that there is an episode of Invader Zim wherein Zim and Dib both get turned into salami?
Bologna.
That's it. They both get turned into bologna, and it's a bad time. It gave me nightmares.
Oh. That's it. Yeah, I guess like maybe that's one of the worst things to be turned into. Okay, the only question that I didn't ask was if lying makes Pinocchio's nose grow, what sins would make ears grow or chin or fingers? I kind of think like maybe passive aggressive comments would make your chin grow.
Eavesdropping could make your ears grow.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
I feel like gossip would do something if he gossiped about people.
His lips, his tongue.
Ah.
Okay. I know I've been getting deep into the lore, but I do have another lore question. If Pinocchio can grow various parts of himself through various sinning, then if he leads a completely hedonistic and sinful life, does he become a giant of sin?
I feel like he would literally just become just massive, like an idol.
What if the Emperor of Night is Pinocchio from the future?
Oh shit. He's fire. You're
what makes him grow extra arms?
some really, really terrible thing.
I don't know if we can talk about that on the
terrible is subjective.
terrible like a force of nature, not like above morality.
He's just really good at juggling, guys. Just
really great and terrible.
Yeah, that was just too much fun. He had too much fun juggling.
Yeah, and that's became true. Satan.
Well, does anybody have any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
I have one more thought. Does anyone remember, I think it's like Shrek 3 when somebody tries to ask Pinocchio a question and he rambles on in a confusing non-answer?
Yes.
Meeting Kate is why he got there.
What? I'm lost.
He's saying that Pinocchio wouldn't want to hang out with me because I'd be doing this investigation and would come up with creative ways to get around it. But is wasting someone's time a sin? And what part of the body would that grow?
Your legs.
Legs? I would think legs would be dancing.
What would be dancing?
Your legs or your feet.
Dirty dancing.
Dirty dancing.
Mm. I know that gluttony makes your belly grow.
Oh, wow. That's true. Mm. Guess what lust makes grow?
Your hands? Your hands. Your smile. Who said that? That was Haley. Lust makes your smile grow. Okay. All right. Well, then we're going to wrap it up. Okay. What was it like sharing this movie with everyone?
I am so glad that I got to inflict it on more people. It's just my purpose in life is to just shove weird media down the throats of people that I know, regardless of how well I know them. So I feel great.
Well, wonderful. That works really well here. And thank you so much for sharing this movie with all of us. It's been really fun.
And thanks for having me and sitting through it.
And thank you everybody for coming. And this has been great. This has been Memory Static. Return your videos
here.
Return
your videos here.
Here.
Return your videos here.
I don't think Bailey likes it when we cut her off. That's a sign.
I like.
No, it's fine.
It's fine. It's a chorus.
Yeah. I. We're done now.
Free. taking up space, and you haven't seen a cent. Now you better pay your rent. You are solely a piece of slime.
Memory Static Podcast is hosted and edited by Bailey Moore, with original score and additional sound editing by Indigo Starbeam. The slow-moving time machine is voiced by... Original song is written by Bailey Moore and Indigo Starbeam. Find more music at IndigoStarbeam.com. To learn more about the film events, follow Memory Static Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you like the show, please consider donating to our Patreon. If you have stories to share about any movie we've covered, please write us at memorystatic@gmail.com. Special thanks to our guest, Hank Hoffman. And thank you to all of our party guests. And thank you for listening. Goodbye.